On the second day of August 2011, in San Diego, California, we're reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text number 22. Name partasti kartavyam. Trishu lokeshu kinchana. Nanavaptamavaptavyam. Varta eva jakarmani. O son of Pita, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor have I a need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in the Vedic literatures as follows. Tamishwaranam padamam maheshwaram tam devatanam padamam chadayavatam patim patinam padamam parastat vidama devam bhuvaneshamidyam natasya kayam kadanam cha vidyate natat samasyam yadikashya drishyate parasya shakti vividhaiva shuhyate swabhaviki gana balakriyaja. The Supreme Lord is the controller of all other controllers, and He is the greatest of all the diverse planetary leaders. Everyone is under His control. All entities are delegated with particular power only by the Supreme Lord. They are not supreme themselves. He is also worshipable by all demigods and is the supreme director of all directors. Therefore, He is transcendental to all kinds of material leaders and controllers and is worshipable by all. There is no one greater than Him, and He is the supreme cause of all causes. He does not possess a bodily form like that of an ordinary living entity. There is no difference between His body and His soul. He is absolute. All His senses are transcendental. Any one of His senses can perform the action of any other sense. Therefore, no one is greater than Him or equal to Him. His potencies are multifarious, and thus His deeds are automatically performed as a natural sequence. Shvetashvata Upanishad 6, 7-8. Since everything is in full opulence in the personality of Godhead and is existing in full truth, there is no duty for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to perform. One who must receive the results of work has some designated duty. But one who has nothing to achieve within the three planetary systems certainly has no duty. And yet, Lord Krishna is engaged on the battlefield of Kurukshetra as the leader of the Kshatriyas because the Kshatriyas are duty-bound to give protection to the distressed. Although he is above all the regulations of the revealed scriptures, he does not do anything that violates the revealed scriptures. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, thinking for a second about why Krishna would come to this planet. He certainly doesn't need to come down here for any of his own reasons. He's perfectly situated in the spiritual world. Enjoying unlimited pastimes with unlimited loving devotees. He has nothing to gain from coming here. And yet he comes repeatedly, as he says, yadayadahi dharmasa glana bhavati bharata, whenever there's irreligion, I come to protect the devotees and annihilate the miscreants and reestablish religion, real religion. And he also enacts his pastimes in Vrindavan in order to enliven the devotees and attract them to the highest levels of devotional service. So what is he doing all this? Obviously, since he doesn't have any... what's the motive for doing it? He doesn't have any personal ambition. He has nothing to gain, as he says here, by doing these things. So he does it... Clearly, he's doing it out of compassion. He's doing it out of mercy. Because we are all of the living entities... Not just human beings, but every living entity is eternally connected to him in this bond of love. And the Prophet often gives the example of the wayward son or the prodigal son. You know, goes away from the father's home for some reason, you know, and is wandering in some other city, you know. and gets into trouble. He forgets all about the father, gets involved in something. But the father never forgets about him, or her, as the case may be. And always waiting, when will that phone call come? When will that email come? When, you know, they're asking for help, and I'll immediately send them money by in some means so that they can come back, or at least do better. You know, at least the connection is there. So similarly, we're wandering in all of these universes, all of these bodies, suffering like anything, simply for the one reason of turning away from our eternal Father and friend and trying to be independent. So Krishna is always making arrangements whereby we can be reminded of our original situation and invited back, attracted back, which means being trained in devotional service. So part of that training is that Krishna gives an example. He gives an example for activity. Now, this may be a little bit puzzling because some of his activities certainly aren't exemplary. This is the difference between following in the footsteps and imitating. The question was raised at, you know, at the exactly pertinent spot in the middle of the Rasa dance chapters by Parikshit Maharaj. Exactly this. Why is it that Krishna, who is the originator, the enunciator, and the enforcer of all law, of all regulations and moral and laws and ethics, why does he violate that, you know, the basic most ethical principles, by attracting other men's wives out on the side? Like, yeah. Just come up there. You can sit. Yeah. I wanted you to set up a book for him, if you could. Sorry. By this whole thing with the gopis, when that seems to be an obvious violation of the, you know, common religion in any society. You know, you don't dance in the middle of the night with others' wives and all of this. So the answer was, Trukadeva answered a very interesting way. He didn't answer directly. He says, when great powerful personalities, such as Lord Shiva, may contravene moral codes, they're not affected by them because they burn up any possible reaction. Just as Lord Shiva can drink an ocean of poison. You know, when the demons and the demigods started churning an ocean of milk in order to get nectar so they could be immortal. This is a pastime in the eighth canon of Bhagavatam. They didn't get the nectar right away. First came this terrible poison that was threatening the whole world. And so Shiva, out of his compassion, he drinks the poison. But he's not harmed by it. The only thing that happens is his neck turns blue. So he's Nilakanta. Huh?
Becomes an ornament.
Right? Yeah, it's like an ornament. Yeah. But if we even touch such a poison, we die. You know. So similarly, sin is like an activity that is like drinking poison, a slow-acting poison that eventually kills you, or eventually has a deleterious effect. You know, if you do some evil deed, there may not be any result right away, right? But even on an ordinary level, the cops can come if you commit some crime and eventually get caught, right? And it's interesting because crime is just like that. If you hang out with the wrong kind of crowd, you know, you get into a criminal mentality, dealing drugs, and, you know, becoming a gangster or whatever. But first it seems, oh, this is great. Now I got work, I got some money in my pocket, you know, and I got people to run with, right? But what happens is you do it once, you know, you get into the mood, before you know it, you're in the criminal mentality, you're one of them, right? So one of the things about sinful activity of any kind is that it plants the desire seed to do it again. Do it again and again. So you get into that mentality. And eventually it fructifies in the poison fruit of your, you know, painful reaction. Either, you know, in the ordinary sense, you get arrested, thrown in jail, or in the higher government, you'll suffer in this life or the next in so many ways. When someone is suffering, you should know by the philosophy, it's their sinful reaction from previous life or this life fructifying, becoming obvious. Prarabdha karma. This is what's going on. So this is all a big mistake. Every living entity is by nature a servant of Krishna, in which we happily exist with our eternal friend and master in the spiritual world. That's our natural position. We've forgotten it for so many births. Millions. So that's in that sense, Krishna's pained. He's feeling compassion, as he says in the 10th chapter. Anukampaya. You know? So he wants to help. So he comes down, and there's many things going on. On one side, there are the devotees who also need help, in the sense they need enlivenment. You know, and he explains this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a wonderful passage in the 4th chapter, Adi Lila, where Krishna's Kaviraj is giving us Krishna's thoughts before he comes, as Krishna, not as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I will go down and I will enact my most wonderful loving pastimes in Vrindavan, and in this way show the standard of spontaneous devotional service, Raga Bhakti, which is what really pleases me. You see, this is the idea, is that the basic principle is that the living entity is meant to serve Krishna for his pleasure. So if you want to do that, you have to know what pleases Krishna the most, right? Now, what pleases Krishna the most is the same thing that would please us the most, if you were God, which is someone who really loves you for yourself and, you know, in a very intense way and is willing to do anything for you. You know, no barriers, no strictures. You know, there's some really, real bond there. So Krishna has many worshippers. Some are very official, right? They worship him as the supreme personality of God. There's somewhat of an element of fear there. You know, I must worship. I must worship. This is my Lord and Master. And he can give me all protection in this dangerous world. And, you know, that's good, right? But it's not so pleasing. It's kind of an official position. It's a distance there. You're so great and I'm so small. You know, there's no spontaneous affection there. You know what I'm saying? So Krishna is even more pleased when devotees more intense love. He covers that his own divinity, and they're able to enact to relate to him as friends. As friends, even here with Arjuna, he also covered his divinity to some degree, right? And Arjuna said, "Oh, what have I done?" He saw in the 11th chapter. I've been sitting on the same bed. I've been insulting you, you know, like friends do, you know, fooling around. And engaging you in my service, right? Krishna's in Arjuna's service here. He's the charioteer. He's, you know, a servant. Now Arjuna suddenly sees this universal form. He's so powerful. He's devouring all the worlds. He's blazing fire like a million suns. What have I done? I've offended you. Please forgive me, like a father forgives the son, or a husband or wife, like that. You know? So Krishna doesn't like that. You know, he'd much rather... I mean, he likes it, but he much more prefers to have the intimate friendship. So that friendship is perfectly expressed in Goloka Vrindavan with his cowherd boyfriends. We read the Krishna book, or we read the, you know, the 10th canto, and we see that. We should never think that this is ordinary playing of boys, you know, one after another. You know, it's idyllic. It's archetypal play. You know, we've all played as kids, you know. I mean, of course, nowadays, does any kid go out to play anymore? You know, now everything is scheduled, the soccer practice and the basketball, great competition anxiety. And when I was a kid, you know, you just go out and run around, play hide and seek, and fool around with your friends. So that's a lot more fun, you know. So that's what Krishna's doing, but in the perfect way. So many games they play, hide and seek, and many others, you know, teasing each other, running around. Idyllic scene, you know, in the forest, weather is perfect, you know, all the secret places you could hide, big trees to play in. You know, and every now and then, there's some demon that comes. Everyone gets, Krishna save us. Krishna, he's just one of us. How's he going to do? Oh, he killed the demon. You're so wonderful. You know, it's just like one thing after another. But they don't know he's God. You know, they think that, oh, he's, you know, he's some deva, or he's empowered, he got lucky or something. You know, or special friend. You see the difference. So now, back to our verse. So there's all different levels of devotees. And some are simply very involved with performing the duties in Varnashram. Very important, you know. So for them, Krishna also takes that role. He takes different roles in his pastime. In his childhood, you know, he immediately goes to Vrindavan, and it's all spontaneous devotion. But then he leaves there, goes to Mathura. It's a little different. And in Dwarka, he's a proper householder. He's got ten children, ten sons and one daughter by each wife. He gets them duly married. He goes out. He gets up early in the morning, you know, leaves the bed. The queens, Prabhupada says, are very disgusted that he has to leave. Yeah, I think he used that word. He leaves and goes to meditate. That's a proper thing. Mangalarti. You know, he meditates on himself. What else is he going to meditate? And then he goes to work at the Sabha to consult with all the leaders of Hussein and the others. Got to run this big city. We got demons coming, you know, we have to plan for defense. That's also a job, you know, killing all these big demons, Shalva and all that, you know. That's not, it's fun for him, but it's, you know. So the idea is that he does everything perfectly for different levels. And therefore, that's why he's saying here that I don't have any duty to perform. How can you have a duty? Duty is given by a higher power, right? The state gives you a duty. Or society, right? Your marriage, vows, okay? Spontaneous thing, you know, is that every man wants to have a million girlfriends. But that's not, society will not, that won't work. So there's marriage. Marriage vows is marriage, okay? You know, responsible, take care of the kids. That's duty. It's a higher duty. You may not want to do it, but you have to do it. Right? That's duty. Social duty, government, says you have to go fight in the war, okay, I'll do my duty, I may lose my life for the greater good. But there's no higher power than Krishna. So no one can give him a duty to perform. But he takes on the duty himself in order to be an example for everyone. That's the previous verse, yudyadatadati shrestas. And as he says in the next verse, can you tell us you can't talk in there? It's not going to work. The next verse says, because if I didn't do it, then everyone would follow my example and society would be ruined. So he doesn't want that. So you see? So therefore he's saying, you know, that if I don't have anything to gain by doing these duties, but I still am engaged. Now in the purport, Prabhupada quotes this verse. These are famous verses, especially the second one. Natasikayam karanam tavidyate. There's no duty. He takes it to be, there's no duty that I perform. But there's no one equal to me or greater to me. You cannot find anyone or anything greater than you, or equal to me. But then the Ishwar, Krishna. But he has unlimited energies. Parasya shakti vividhai vishuyate. Now this is from the Shrutis. This is from the Shvetashvata Upanishad, is it? Yeah. And that's very important. This is saying that the Shrutis declare, it is heard, that he's full of all kinds of energies. It does. In order to understand God, and it's not easy, in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have to accept the reality of unlimited energies that he has, that he can use to create and destroy and maintain this world and do everything else, all different varieties of energies, and not be changed himself. This is very important, because the Mayavadis say, oh, if there's a God, then he must be changed, because this universe is changing all the time. They don't accept the idea of an uncaused causer who can manipulate all these energies, you know, directly and indirectly, and remain completely unchanged and unaffected by it. That's the key element. This is a chincha beta beta philosophy. Means that inconceivably, simultaneously, one with and different. So in one sense, Krishna is one with his energies, just like the sun is one with the sunshine. There's no meaning to the sunshine without the sun. There's no meaning to the sun without the sunshine. Right? How does the sun do anything? Through the energy, heat and light. In fact, it's sometimes called a kara, right? The hands of the sun are the sun rays, the heat and the light. It's a lot of heat, a lot of light, right? That's how he does things. But the sun remains unchanged, you know, in the ordinary sense. The sun's still burning millions and millions of years later. So similarly, Krishna is ekadeshas titasyagnir, jyotsna vistaradi yata, parasabhamana shaktis tadedam ekilam jagat. So ekadesha, just as there's one spot, supposedly we have Dharma Setu is performing a sacrifice in the temple room here. So the temple, suppose it's in the center, right? So the fire is lit. You're in the corner of the room there. You're seeing the light of the fire. And if it's a big fire, maybe you'll feel a little heat, right? So the fire is in one spot, but the heat and light is going everywhere. Simple concept. Similarly, Krishna is in one spot, Goloka, but he's spread everywhere through his energies. This energy, the earth, water, fire, air, ether, everything we're experiencing, and we ourselves, are the energy of Krishna. So just as you say, if you open your blinds and the sunlight streams into the room, oh, the sun is coming in the room. The sun itself is not coming in the room, it's sunshine, but it's a way of speaking, right? Because the sun, as we know it, is entering your room, the sunshine. Similarly, Krishna is everywhere by his energies. That's what he explains in the seventh chapter. You know, rasoham apsakonteya. You know, everything you experience in this world, that's me. The taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon. This way, you train the mind to always see Krishna within the material world. This is the first step in God realization. You know, to see this as not just happening, it's just not nature, didn't come out by chance. There's a supreme intelligence guiding it, every single movement of every single atom. There's nothing, no chance. You know? So that's what's being parasya shakti, and therefore swabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha. By his very nature, by his will, you know, by knowledge, by power, by activity, everything is taking place by these energies. You know, automatically. Not, you know, automatically means by the will of the Lord. It seems to be going on automatically. But there's a will behind it. This is the greatness of the Lord. So there, who can give him any duty to perform? None. And yet, he still acts in this way. Out of his great compassion for us, to give us a good example, perfect example of activity, household life, everything else, speaks the Bhagavad Gita, giving all kinds of instructions for human beings. And yet, when the time comes, you know, he also has that other aspect where he'll relate to you just as you relate to him. In spontaneous love and devotion, there are unlimited pastimes, not bounded by any rules and regulations, except loving ones. Questions or comments on this nice verse? Yes, Prabhu.
In the purport, it says, one who must receive the results of work has some designated duty. One who has nothing to achieve within the three planetary systems certainly has no duty. So then, where does duty come from? So
for us?
Like, what's the purpose of it? Because if someone who does have to achieve something has a duty, and someone who doesn't have to achieve something doesn't have a duty, then what is the relationship between that? What is the relationship between having to achieve something and therefore having to have a duty?
Yeah, well, the idea is that the more that we're invested in this world, right, then if we want to do it right and not just to be degraded, because, you know, it's just like if you come to America and you don't know the laws, you know, and you don't care about the laws, you know, you're going to get into trouble. You know, you'll drive on the wrong side of the road. You know, you walk into the supermarket and just try to walk out with the groceries, thinking, you know, suppose you're from the jungle. Said, oh, it's great, it's just like a tree. Let me just take this. Then. And then you get, you know, you got to know the laws. So the point is that if we're committed if we're in illusion and we're committed to this world, then we have to do it in such a way that's bounded by the Vedic instructions. And there's so much of that. Varnashram dharma, some of the sacrifices, you know, samskaras at each age. There's so many rules for doing it right. What's the purpose of all those rules? To keep you within the Vedic culture and gradually to introduce you to, you know, devotional service, bhakti. So that's the idea. And there are so many duties, like I said, the marriage duties, this and that. But if someone is who has nothing to achieve within the three planetary system, so as, say, a brahmachari, you know, say, well, I don't really want to commit myself to that. I want to try to get out before I get entangled, you know, in so many commitments on the material side. Let me see if I can get... So what does it mean? It's exactly, you realize, I have nothing to achieve within these three worlds. I don't want to... Do you want to go to Brahmaloka? I don't want to go to Brahma. I can honestly say I don't want to go to Brahmaloka. You know? Even though you read about... you can read about Brahmaloka. Even the Bhagavatam, you read about these heavenly planets, you know? It honestly doesn't have any attraction for me. You know? Well, that's good. You know? What to speak of, you know, achieving something in this world? I mean, I have to try, you know, after 40 years, to get into to understand the mentality of someone who's trying to succeed in this world, you know. And then the whole thing is built on material desire. Okay, you know, I'm getting older now, you know, I'm 16. And now I have to worry about the future. The parents are saying, the teachers say, yes, 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 yes. Get an education and you'll get a, you know, otherwise you'll be like, you see these homeless guys? You know, and all these vast mass of unwashed, we used to call them. You know, no job, no prospects, you know. You don't want to be like that, right? Okay. So I'll do my homework, you know, get into college, and at the end of all of that is whatever, middle-class life, you know, good salary, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 a year. You know, you can dream. And so that's your goal. Well, then I got to do all these things. You have so many duties to perform. Homework, you know, don't do this, don't take drugs, you know, be careful. Don't get anyone pregnant, you know, there's a million different things. And then, at the end of it, okay, I got my degree, you know, and then there's so many more duties. Now I got to look for a job, right? And then, whoa, as soon as you get that job, 9 to 5, you got plenty of duties. So it all comes from the desire to gain something in this material world. But one who has nothing to achieve within the three doesn't have any duty. So now, let's look at that statement, because this is just directly coming from the previous verses. If you recall, in text 17, Yastvatnota Revisyad, he says, but for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there's no duty. So you see, that's obviously, I mean, one who is fully Krishna conscious is no duty. So at the higher levels, where's the duty? The spontaneous desire to get up and chant Hare Krishna, serve Krishna for his pleasure, ecstatic symptoms, you know, I mean, at a high level, right? Where's the duty? It's not duty, it's love. There's a difference between love and duty. You see what I'm saying? So the only thing we have to gain in this world, and it's not really in this world, is Krishna's favor. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for to become dear to Krishna. Read the 12th chapter. At a certain point, Adveshta Sarvabhutanam, I forget the number of the verse. There's a description there, and everyone ends with, such a devotee is very dear to me. That's our motive. Now, to get to that point, we may accept what we call duties. All right, got to sweep the temple floor, got to get up, chant my rounds, you know. They feel like duties because we're not spontaneously attracted yet. You know, and they are duties. It's important to come to that responsible position and feel that, okay, even though I don't want to do something, I know that I should do it for my ultimate good. And at the end of that whole ultimate good is the real, if you will, holy grail, which is that you become spontaneously attracted. It's all simply acts of loving exchange. And it doesn't feel like a duty anymore. Just like Krishna's duty. He has accepted the duty to go and herd the cows. Right? It's very important. I mean, the whole village of Vrindavan depends on those cows. Okay, responsibly goes out. But what happens as soon as he goes out there? They're playing all day. You know, isn't that the best kind of job? Where your job is just to play all day? and then by doing that you sustain yourself in it. Isn't that the ideal? You know, not to make a lot of money and then worry about protecting it, and you know, that's crazy. The real idea is that you're doing what you want to do all day, and you're sustained, and you're surrounded by loving people who love you, and this is how you live forever. You know? But the only way to do that is to join in Krishna's pastimes. He is actually the one who has the capability of arranging that kind of environment, the spiritual world, through his Shakti, of relating to everyone in such a way that everyone feels personally loved and exchanged with him. We can't do that. We try to attempt that. You know, someone who has a lot of money, have so many friends and parties, you know, and wives or girlfriends, whatever. But it's a fake. It's demonic, and you suffer from that. But Krishna can actually arrange that. So duty dissolves into spontaneous devotion in Krishna consciousness. But in every other sphere, you accept these duties, and ultimately you're cheated. You're not given the result of what you hope to get by accepting those duties. Your fame and you know, glorious, I died for my country. Yeah, but where are you? How do you know about that fame? Your name is on some building or some plaque or something. And you're in your next body. You don't even know anything. It's cheating, you see. It's a change-up. Maya is changing you up. Here, serve me. Prabhupada once said, he was giving class. This is a great talk. He's in New Dwarka, in the early days, 70. I don't even know if he's in the, maybe in the old temple where the Fate Museum is now. So he's giving class. And these LA classes are really sweet because Prabhupada had, you know, the movement is now a success. He's got all of these Western devotees. And you can compare, you know, when he speaks in India and he speaks in the West. In India, he had just a few devotees around him, but mostly he's speaking to a lot of Indians who really aren't his people yet, you know. So he's blasting away, you know. It's a different mood. It's, and he usually has a large, you know, large audience at these pandals and everything, you know. But when he's speaking to the LA devotees, these are devotees who actually surrendered to him. And there's a good number, maybe 40 or 50, you know, in the temple there. And it's a real sweet exchange. So he's speaking there, you know, giving basic Krishna consciousness. And then you hear in the background, okay, little tinkle, tinkle, bells, bells, bells. And you know, what it is this ice cream man. Do they still have ice cream man? So the ice cream man's coming down Watsaka, you know, louder and louder and louder. And after a while, Prabhupada hears that and he stops the lecture. And he asks Vishnujan, he said, what is that? So Prabhupada, that's the ice cream man. They, you know, invite the kids to come and get the ice cream. And so Prabhupada picks up on that. And he says, oh, this is Maya, the bell, you know. He imitates Maya. Come on, come on, enjoy me. Come on, come on, enjoy me. And become entrapped. And he compares it to the fish with the lures, you know, or the hook with the worms, you know. The fish, and he says every animal has a certain sense that he becomes entrapped by, you know. And for the fish, it's the tongue. And so this is Maya's allurement, constantly, you know. Okay, we know that you didn't enjoy so much there, you know, but this you will actually enjoy. You know, this new thing, whatever it is, something to eat, some girl, some this, a boy. Something new, you know, and the mind goes for that. So that's the whole thing with Maya. But Krishna's invitation is for real, you know. He's actually, come on, enjoy with me. Don't enjoy, you know, on your own, but enjoy with me in my pleasure dance in the spiritual world. Prabhupada talks like that. And that will be more than we can possibly imagine. We can't even conceive of the levels of bliss that is available there, you know. Sometimes the comparison is given that there's sense gratification, and we're going to enter into this section in a few verses about kama, very very illustrative. What are the different levels of that the living entity can experience pleasure? So the example is given at the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, or Nectar of Devotion, excuse me, Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, that the pleasures of sense gratification are like a little drop of water compared to the ocean of Brahmananda. Brahmananda is the pleasure that comes when the soul experiences the Supreme Brahman directly, you know, and merges into the white light. It's blissful because it's like not the slightest pain or difficulty, mental, emotional, physical, nothing. You're free of all pain, you know. Imagine on one of these blistering days, boy, when I was in Winnipeg, we've got 95, 96, hot and muggy, and in the center of the country into the hundreds. Imagine that you're on, you know, in one of those blistering days, you're on the street and there's a fire burning and you're next to the fire. Wow, you know, suffering like anything. And then you're able to get away from the fire and go into an air-conditioned room, you know, that's just a normal temperature, 72, you know. It feels like, oh, you attained Brahmananda. You're, this is my most ardent desires have been fulfilled, at least for a minute or two when you're feeling, you know, relief. So that's Brahmananda. But where's the positive bliss? You know, it's just negative. No more suffering. So the sense gratification, the greatest, intense, most intense sense gratification you can imagine, that's like a drop of water compared to Brahmananda. And Brahmananda is like a drop of in the ocean of the bliss of devotional service. We can't even conceive of it. We get little, you know, hints of that drop. You know, even in the first days of Krishna consciousness, there's something there, obviously, right? You have these festivals, you chant, you get absorbed, you know, and there's some little fillip, you know, of ecstasy. That's fine. That's just a hint. But that can increase unlimitedly. We should have that faith. So then where's the sense of duty? There's no duty. So that's the whole idea here. If you're entangled, okay, varnashram, duty, so many duties to perform, let's do it right. But then you come to the point of and having no duties. So vaidhi bhakti, rules and regulations, got to get up, got to do this, don't do that. You know, so many do's and don'ts. That's duty. But that's meant to lead us to raga bhakti, spontaneous devotion. The very things that you had to do once become sources of pleasure for you. You know, real pleasure with no bad effect, no side effect. Every material pleasure has the bad side effect. Yehi sangsparshata boga, dukkha yona yevite. Those pleasures of the senses, that's the source of your misery. Great, now what do I do? How do I enjoy? By premananda, by bhakti-ananda. Okay, any other question? Maybe we can do one more verse. Yes, Prabhu.
Srila Prabhupada is saying here he does not do anything that violates the revealed scriptures. I mean, externally it would seem that he does. Like, Lord Ram Chandra, he did not do anything. He was actually very, to the point. He was very to the point, like,
right.
To make sure he doesn't do anything. But if you look at Lord Balram, like, he killed the Brahmana, like, Romaharshana,
Romaharshana, Sutta.
Yeah, he killed them, which he should, actually, externally, he should not do, kill a Brahman like that. It seemed a little, I mean, he was sent off to a...
He offered, oh, how do you want me to atone?
Yeah.
You know, well, he killed the Brahmana.
Of course, like we discussed, Lord Krishna seems to, right?
Yes.
So, and revealed scriptures are usually dealing with, you know, our external rules.
Yes, I know, right. So, but isn't Bhagavatam a revealed scripture? Bhagavatam is the supreme revealed scripture. So it's explained that, you know, just like, go back to the gopis, that also seems to violate the revealed scriptures. But when you understand the constitutional position of Krishna, it's like, you know, it's described like a child playing with his reflection in the mirror. Now, how can he commit a sin? You know, there's no sin. You know, he can do anything with that. It's his own reflection. It seems to violate. The point is that it seems to violate, but in the higher sense, when you understand the deep import of the scripture and who Krishna is, and then you realize that he's not violating. He's setting a standard for a higher kind of service, because or displaying, if you will, the higher kind of service to him. So that that's why it said, I memorize this verse, mantatas tantatas chiddham. I forget the rest of it right now. But this is a verse spoken by Shukracharya, where he says, in the matter of performing Vedic rituals, there's so many possibilities, chidram, in terms of mantra and tantra, means chanting the mantras, you know, precisely, and paraphernalia, vastu, you know, time, place, all of that. It's got to be precise. There's so much chidra. But when it comes to tava anusankirtanam, then all of the chidras are resolved. There's no discrepancy. So the idea is that in the higher sense, if one is truly following the principles as given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as enunciated in Bhagavatam, then there's no violation. So Krishna didn't—he seemed to violate, you know, for the sake of the smartest and everything, to keep them out of the realm. He said, "Okay, Krishna's, you know, violent, so we don't want to go there." Okay, fine, you don't go there. You know, he's looking for the sincere devotees who are ready to take some risks, you know, on Krishna's behalf. Not that we just throw out, you know, the Vedic instructions, but under the guidance, sometimes, you know, like when Srila Prabhupada came to America, he had to do that, right? This was a risk, and in performing marriages, for instance. Sannyasi doesn't do that, even in the Gaudiya tradition. Lord Chaitanya wouldn't go near anything like that. But for the sake of the higher preaching, you know, for actually getting movement started in America, after some time he didn't perform the marriages, his disciples did it. But he had to do it. So he took a risk for the higher cause, and it came out successful. He could do that because he's powerful, and because he was empowered by Krishna to do these things. So similarly, you know, for the higher sake of the spontaneous devotion and showing this pastimes, Krishna does that. In the higher sense, there's no violation. You know, that's the idea. We have to understand it. All right, we have time for one more. Yeah, short purport. Okay. Yadi yaham navarteyam. Jatu karman hitandritaha. Mama vartmana vartante. Manushyak Partha Sarvashaha. For if I ever fail to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. So as follows from the previous one. He says, I'm engaged in prescribed duties at the end of 22. Now, if I didn't, this is what would happen. Purport. In order to keep the balance of social tranquility for progress in spiritual life, there are traditional family usages meant for every civilized man. Although such rules and regulations are for the conditioned souls and not Lord Krishna, because he descended to establish the principles of religion, he followed the prescribed rules. Otherwise, common men would follow in his footsteps, because he is the greatest authority. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is understood that Lord Krishna was performing all the religious duties at home and out of home as required of a householder. Now, one note on this, and we can end with this pointing out, is that this is also, Krishna's lila. He's also risking something. And that when Lord Chaitanya came, Krishna came as Lord Chaitanya. He came in the mood of Radharani to show this highest spontaneous devotion of Krishna, especially in separation, right? And so this is, completely out of the realm of Varnashram, really. Although Lord Chaitanya did externally, strictly follow all the sannyas for that very reason, with strictures. But there's nothing, Varnashram doesn't include spontaneous dancing and chanting in front of Jagannath and falling on the ground and rolling on the ground. That's not part of Varnashram. And when that's going on, you look around, oh, is that a Shudra Vaishnava or is that a Kshatriya Vaishnava? He has so many. It doesn't work like that. But when Lord Chaitanya, he preached the Bhagavad Purana, there were the 10th canto, the rasa dance, and the writings of the Goswamis, which expand on those moods in detail. And you have some, the Krishna Karnamita, Govinda Lilamrita, and many other writings that deal with seemingly love affairs between boys and girls. So this is the need for the parampara, for the disciplic succession. After Lord Chaitanya's disappearance, there appeared so many what we call upasampradayas, up to the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that who weren't interested in the strictures of the Vedas, of the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, and simply misused the teachings of Lord Chaitanya as some kind of sex religion. I don't need any books, I don't need any restrictions, I'll just be in my original sarup as a gopi, or imitating Krishna, whatever, and created a havoc in Gaudiya Vaishnava circles. So much so that it was thought to be, that it had a very low opinion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he revived it by preaching it as it was, as given, by Lord Chaitanya, as it really was, which is really the strictest morality, The idea is that Lord Chaitanya was a sannyasi par excellence. Even if he had some lady disciple, they had to offer obeisances from a distance. That's how strict he was. And because this kind of understanding of Krishna dancing with the gopis and his intimate affairs is really understandable only from the highest platform of renunciation. Otherwise, it's misinterpreted as some kind of a boy-girl thing. It's not like that. And these words of Krishna is very prophetic. Yes, mamavarmanavantani manashak partasarvasha. Mistaking Krishna's activities or misusing even willfully, people, try to imitate the rasa dance, they try to, this looseness between boys and girls. So that's why Krishna, in his other lila, he carefully followed all the rules and regulations in his Dwarka lila. And as Lord Chaitanya carefully followed the sannyas dharma.
Ramchandra,
a perfect example throughout his life. He perfectly followed that. Because there's a tremendous example there. And so this is the need for the guide. This is the takeaway from this. To navigate these inconceivable waters of Krishna's lila, of all of them. Why is it that he accepts the duties? That's also a mystery. Why is it that he seemingly violates the duties and the strictures of Shastra? Both of those have to be understood through the teachings of our acharyas. Because it's puzzling. Ordinary people. I like to tell this story. I had someone come up to me. I'm waiting at the carousel in an airport to get my baggage, And one fellow comes up to me and says, how can you worship a god like that? You know, he goes out and he dances in the middle of the night. He bought into that whole thing with other men's wives. That's no God, you know, like that. You can't talk to someone like that. You can just try to get away from them. You know. Complete ignorance. You can't. What are you going to say, you know? This is the problem. Because, you know, everything is available to everyone. You have to understand that these Goswami books, they were only given to certain disciples. Govinda Lamrita was not meant to be read by everyone. But now, with the internet and mass publishing, anything you want, you can get it, and you can read anything and get misguided. Therefore, the need for understanding things slowly and carefully under the guidance of genuine devotees is paramount. And Prabhupada emphasizes.
First in Bhagavad Gita says that one has to go according to his eligibility. So yesvayadhikare ya nishta sa guna parikriti.
Yes. The eligibility. That's why we pray every morning to Tulsi, seva adhikara diya korodija dasi. Let me have the adhikari. Please give me the eligibility to be your servant. Not that I'm just going to, oh, I'm your servant. You know? And, yeah, right. And meanwhile, you're so conditioned, so many material desires are still floating around in you. In your heart. All glorious to Srila Prabhupada.